Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Update from Living Compassion. My name is Michael and it's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Joanne, Steve, Lisa, and Bobby from Hawaii. Welcome to the show.
Aloha. Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Aloha. How are you doing?
Very good. Yourself?
Great. Great.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Well, we've been riding our bicycles over on the Big Island of Hawaii, and we all got together and decided to do a bike trip across the country. And so as we were planning it, we thought, you know what, this would be a great opportunity to raise money for the African Vulnerable Children Project. So here we are, and we haven't started riding yet, but we're making our way up the coast to Oregon, and we're heading towards Washington, and we'll probably start in about maybe 10 days.
Great. Hey, I'm going to reflect some of that because you're a little bit fuzzy coming through.
Okay.
So you're from Hawaii, and you've been biking across the Big Island there, training, it sounds like. And now you're going to be cycling across the U.S. to raise awareness and funds for the Africa Vulnerable Children Project. And you're currently in Oregon on the coast, and you're heading north to Washington, and then you'll be heading east across the U.S. Is that right?
That's right.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And what inspired you?
Well, originally we wanted to do a trip across the United States, and then Steve and Bobby got into bicycling, and we decided we could do two things at once and also raise funds and awareness for the project.
Great. Great. So you wanted to cycle across the U.S., and it makes a great combination with the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Exactly.
Great. And tell me a little bit about your interest in the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Well, we first learned about the project when we were at a monastery retreat, and we thought it was a good way to give something back and to other people. And I do some painting, and I decided one way for me to help that project is to donate a percentage of whatever art I sell to the project.
Oh, that's great. Great. So you love to do art, and it's a win-win because you can donate some of the proceeds to the project.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, what I love about the Africa Vulnerable Children Project is it just feels like such a win-win from every angle. Because I get to participate in my way, you know, for example, donating funds, and the people in Africa are participating by bringing their willingness to the project, and the kids are benefiting because they're eating and going to school.
Yeah, I think that is a lot of the attraction, is that there's real whole participation from everybody, and especially the folks at the monastery, and there's just a lot of energy around it that just makes you want to get involved and be part of it.
Yes, yes, a real kind of participation kind of thing. And how do other people react when you tell them about your adventure?
I'm sorry?
How do other people respond when you tell them about the adventure that you're up to?
Well, we've all had really, you know, most people think we're crazy.
Yeah, most people think you're crazy. And as you may be aware, there's an effort going on called Fundraising Everywhere to invite and encourage people to raise funds for the monastery. And to me, this is one of many exciting ways that people are participating.
Yeah.
Great. So when will you be starting from Washington?
Probably in about 10 days. We don't have a set date, but it'll probably be about 10 days, and we'll be riding from Anacortes, Washington, and taking a northern route to Bar Harbor, Maine. And people can follow us on we have a blog spot set up. It's www.teamtrixieblogspot.com. And we didn't introduce Trixie to you.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Trixie.
Yeah, Trixie, she's a little 4.5-pound dog, a multi-poo dog, and she rides on the bicycle up on the handlebars. And, she loves riding, and she's all up for the project, too.
Great. I'm going to
repeat. She brings a smile to everybody she meets.
Say that one more time.
She brings a smile to everybody she meets without doing anything, just smiling and wagging her tail.
Yes, yes, yes. And I've seen your website, and it's a lot of fun. And so I'm going to repeat the website again, which is Team Trixie, that's TRIXIE.blogspot.com.
Right, that's correct.
And about how long do you expect your journey to take?
We're taking our time, so we'll probably average somewhere around 50 miles a day, and it'll probably be about 90 days to 100 days to the journey.
Great, and do you have a good support team and places to sleep and like that?
Go ahead, John.
Well, we bought a used mini motorhome. And Steve and Bobby are going to be are the cyclists, and Lisa and I are the support team. So we'll be heading out ahead of them and finding campsites. And Steve has visions that on cold days we'll meet them alongside the road with cups of hot chocolate.
That's great.
Know about that, though.
Uh-huh. And does it take you through some mountains and potentially cooler weather?
Yes. We'll be going up over the Cascades and the Rockies, and we'll see. Hopefully there's some snow. It'll be kind of fun riding a bicycle in the snow.
Great.
Go
ahead.
We'll probably have all kinds of weather since we're going to be getting into summer also.
Yeah.
So hot and cold.
Yes. I'm guessing you get a lot. And I'm wondering if Lisa and Bobby have anything that they want to share about their journey.
I bet they do. It's so exciting just thinking about every day we get up, we go see something new, we see different people, we eat different food, and that every day is going to be totally a mystery. Like, we don't know what's going to happen, and that's a really exciting thought.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really fun. Yeah, because you'll be sitting in new places and meeting new people.
Yeah. And you were asking what people said when they found out about the trip, and a lot of people did say that we were crazy, but a lot of people also were really envious and to think that we could take, we're actually planning on spending about 5 months. And, to have the good fortune to be able to take that time and to have good friends that we would want to spend 5 months in a 20-foot motorhome with. I feel really blessed. It's kind of an amazing excursion to be embarking on.
Yes, it does sound really amazing to me. And to me, it's so wonderful that you see it as a blessing and, exciting and a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what I get from spiritual practice is that attitude of mind that you're talking about of waking up in the morning and saying, wow, I wonder what's going to happen today. And, wow, I might as well pay attention so I don't miss anything.
Yeah, definitely. And not getting too caught in the expectations I definitely find that if I'm willing to just be open to what happens and if I try not to think about what I want to have happen, that I'm a whole lot happier.
Yeah, it just makes all the difference in the world, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Great. And
for me, it's a trip. I just started bicycling. I was never into bicycling, and I retired. I'm 66, due for replacement knees, and I put off getting my knees replaced, and I found that I can't hike, but I can ride bicycle, and so far it hasn't really, for some reason, my knees work when I ride bicycle. So I found something I like to do in retirement. I never
played golf or anything like that. So I found something I like to do, and it's an adventure. You know, it's a whole different pace riding a bicycle and a whole different life than being in a cocoon and, you know, of a car and driving across and you know, you smells, you see people and wave, and it's just a whole different experience. So, yeah, it's a whole new thing for me in this time of my life, and I'm really expecting this trip to be a whole lot of things with our interpersonal relationships with each other, with the road, with our own bodies, with our own like for me, riding a lot of times is following the breath, because I have to be so much into my breath just to get the energy to ride up the mountains. I'm an old man, so anyway, it's something that I'm sometimes scared, but you know, I'm really looking forward to it. So far, it's been great.
Yeah, that's so exciting the way you describe it in terms of all those different angles, being together, cycling, and being out in nature, and all those smells and sights that you get when you're not inside a car.
Yeah, it's I don't expect to come back anything like the person I am going into this. I think there's going to be so many changes. You know, it's an opportunity to be aware that that of course the opportunity is at home, but things tend to get into habit where there can't be too much habit in this. You know, you have to kind of take it as it comes. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Joanne, Steve, Lisa, Bobby, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And have a great
Aloha.
Trip.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Aloha.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon.
That was fun.
I want to go.
Yeah.
I think Bobby really either he needs a new definition of old man,
yes.
Or he's going to redefine old man for everybody else.
I think so.
That is outrageous. That is truly inspiring.
Yes.
The whole thing is truly inspiring, that people would make that kind of effort for themselves in the sense of this is something that would be fun and exciting and transformative, and I'm going to arrange my life so that I can give myself that opportunity. And then to go into it with that kind of, just wide open, anything can happen, who knows, I'm going to be a different person here. It's just the best. I mean, as you said, we can all take that to the best of our ability into every day of our lives, every morning when we wake up to realize it's a whole new day. You know, new smells, new tastes, new people to wave at, new adventures to be had, and yeah, it's great.
Yeah, very, very.
And in support of the Africa Vulnerable Children Project. How great is that?
That is a win, win, win.
Yeah, because, you know, they're going to be talking to people all over the place and talking about what they're doing and mentioning that, and people around the world can keep up with them and follow them along, and it's great. I love Sangha.
Yeah, you know, I love these good news updates because we hear from such exciting people doing the most amazing things.
Yeah. Yeah, all over the place.
All over the place. Mm-hmm. Speaking of exciting things, Sherry.
A little closer to home.
A little closer to home.
And with a little less strenuous physical effort.
Potentially, yes. Yes. The Compassionate Eightfold Path Retreat is going to be at the monastery, and that's July 24th to 30th. And then a very exciting Awareness Adventure in the High Sierras. Near the end of August, that's August 19th to 22nd. And then, just in time for Halloween, Hungry Ghost and Subpersonalities. That's also at the monastery, and that's October 28th to 31st.
Great.
Very fun.
I think people can still come and visit me in Felton, too. Is that correct?
I do not know the answer to that question.
I think so.
Okay,
great. Along about 2 weeks from now or something like that.
Yeah.
Going to be in Felton, and that's also going to be a fundraiser for the Africa Work.
Yes, and it's a wonderful workshop at a wonderful location.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say the dates are June 18 and 19.
That sounds right.
Somewhere right around there.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Great.
Good.
And, as usual, we have lots of wonderful callers to talk with today. Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on?
Well, I'm looking at something, and I'm kind of stuck. What happened last week, my uncle is 90 years old today, and he's failing. And I was thinking about him last week, and I started feeling sad, and then that turned into despair. So I decided to facilitate myself on what the despair was about. And what I was hearing was from conditioning was, well, you know, life is this wonderful thing, and then you lose it. So, I mean, and that is a terrible thing. You know, something really great is taken away from you. And so I kept facilitating, and what came up is that there was this part of me who was getting the message from conditioning, really didn't have anything to do with death. It was about, the message was, you're not living your life right, you're wasting your life. And actually then, after I saw that, the despair kind of went away, and I saw, oh, so this is what's going on. I'm this is what conditioning is telling me,
uh-huh.
torturing me with.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, what I'm wondering about is, part of this, you're not living your life right, or you're wasting your life. When I look at that, what is coming up are these standards that conditioning has for me that I'm supposed to meet, and they're all some of them I think are just fantastic standard. I mean, fantastic in the sense of purely fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I can't possibly meet those standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering.
At a certain point, of course, you have to ask, do I even want to meet those standards?
Right.
You know,
right.
So conditioning has all sorts of ideas that, you know, if we stop and examine it, we don't even care about those things. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. And what is part of this is you're so ordinary. You're just ordinary. and like that's a horrible thing. It's a terrible thing to be ordinary. You know, I'm supposed to be special.
It is a big club, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh quote about that?
No.
The most ordinary thing in the world is to want to be extraordinary.
Yeah.
The most extraordinary thing in the world is to be ordinary.
To be ordinary, yeah. Yeah.
To be fully human, living a human life.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing thing.
Mhm. And all of the ordinary things, I'm using quote marks around ordinary, are what make up life. I mean, the busy.
The real sadness, the real crime, is that conditioning doesn't let a person be present to those ordinary things.
Exactly.
And realize that those ordinary things are utterly miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
To really
mm-hmm.
be there for
mm-hmm.
a sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
For the first blossom on a tree. For, you know, I mean, the list is endless, endless.
Mm-hmm.
A blade of grass, you know, a walk in the park. The moon, the phases of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's endless. And we don't get to have any of that because that voice is constantly yammering away about stuff we are supposed to believe it cares about and that we're supposed to have be important to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course, you've been practicing long enough to know it doesn't care a fig about any of that. It just wants
mm-hmm.
you to be miserable.
Right, exactly. And what was coming up was I want to appreciate and be present for the life I have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is an extraordinary life.
Yes. Yes. And the moments when I'm present are extraordinary moments. I mean, they totally are.
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
The thing that we get, once we get that, is you can only be as happy as you can be. You can only experience as much beauty as you can experience. You can only have as much joy as you can have. You know, it doesn't matter where
mm-hmm.
you are or what you're doing. It
mm-hmm.
is just all the externals, the content, is completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can be sitting right there on your couch in a state of ecstasy that, you know, you'd have to look far and wide to find another person who even understood what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, there's just this big, I mean, I thought I could see conditioning, but this is really helping. Thank you.
this is
a big relief.
Welcome.
It's like, I just really just want the life I have. Thank you very much.
Yes, and to really have it.
To
have it in a place of expansiveness and enjoyment and pleasure and receiving and gratitude, whatever it is. You know, when you started off and your uncle is 90 and he's failing, I'm thinking, you know, I just couldn't be sad about that.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I mean, we've 90 years. Wow.
90
yeah.
years. Now,
yeah.
if he missed his life, I could certainly be sad about that.
Yeah.
But if he was here for even a good part of it, I mean, you just got to say, you go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's true. I'm wondering if my fantasizing habit, and I read books a lot. I'm not much into DVDs, but I'll read books as kind of an escape. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll read mysteries. I'm wondering if they're, you know, when I'm unconscious and doing those things, that's feeding the standard.
Absolutely.
It's
feeding the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's feeding the whole thing. And only because you said as an escape. You know, there's nothing that we can't do and enjoy with conscious awareness. But it's the escape. I'm so wound up about this currently because I was talking with one of the monks yesterday, and what we were looking at was this amazing thing that almost everybody is clinging desperately to a life they are attempting to escape.
Hmm.
You with me?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'll give you an example. So I talk to people all the time who are miserable. And I will say something to them like, you know, why don't you come to the monastery for 6 months? Oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, my God, no, I couldn't do that. I have, you know, okay. So, you know, I'm miserable, and my whole day is spent in misery and trying to escape the misery of my life. But I'm certainly not going to change it in any way because
mm-hmm.
I'm clinging desperately to that life.
Yes.
Now, you'd
okay.
think the person who says, you know, I hate my life. I'm completely miserable. If I said, you know, there's a ship leaving for Singapore. Why don't you see if you can stow away? They would say, I got to go. Got to get to that ship. Okay? But
yeah.
No. I hate my life, and I'm miserable, and I'm not going to change a single thing about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So where I need to look is what the escaping.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What at that moment I think I'm escaping from.
Who is escaping?
Who is escaping?
Yeah.
Because
I'm going to project that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is telling you to go unconscious so that it can peacefully
mm-hmm.
sit over there and siphon off your life force.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
beat you up afterwards for wasting your life.
Yeah. There's kind of a, your life isn't like this message. You know, I'll read this great book and, well, gee, your life's not like that.
Yeah. And so, of course, you know, I would challenge you. You know, Michael and I, very excited about talking to the folks who are getting ready to go on the bike trip. If that's the message that you're getting and you're buying that, change your life. If you're going to feel bad that your life isn't like one of those lives, make your life like one of those lives. If you don't want to make your life like one of those lives, stop being willing to feel bad when your life is compared to that life.
Okay.
But it's got to be one way or the other.
Yeah. Do you think fantasizing can be a non-escape?
No, I don't.
That's what I was thinking.
In truth, I don't. No. Now, you can,
okay.
know, you can fantasize, daydream, wool gather, whatever it is. Anything that you say, you know, okay, I have an hour, and what I'm going to devote myself to in this hour is fantasizing. If you can fantasize with conscious awareness, then it's probably not going to do you any damage.
Mm-hmm.
But if what you're saying is, I'm going to go unconscious and get lost in a fantasy, well, you're giving
mm-hmm.
up your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, again, can be all right, but at least know what you're doing and that's the decision that you're making.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then don't let anybody beat you up for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the voices come in and say, look at that, you just wasted 3 hours sitting there fantasizing about something. Okay, well, that's what it's my 3 hours. It's my life. I can do with it whatever I want. That's
mm-hmm.
what I wanted to do. That's what I did. Leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Get tough with them.
Okay.
All right.
Right. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And just a little pat on the back is what's coming to me. That's not a good phrasing, but for the self-facilitation, for realizing that something was going on and that you have the skills to facilitate the person who's having that experience and that you took it to a whole different place.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That's a brilliant thing, self-facilitating.
I'm so glad that
I was taught that in the practice.
That it exists and that you availed yourself of it, because that's the
mm-hmm.
secret. You know, everything can exist, but if you don't take advantage of it, it doesn't do you any good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to stop, drop, and breathe, and then we'll be right back.
Oh, good.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, for purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another call here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Sherry.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. My heart's pounding pretty hard, but...
Is it? Going to have a heart attack right here on the radio show.
I was trying to stop, drop, and breathe, so that was a good reminder.
That was good timing, wasn't it?
It was. It's very good.
Well,
what's
going on?
Well, I'm looking at kind of dealing with noise. I tend to avoid it as much as I can, like loud noise or music or... And I'm looking to move to a house that's on a busy street, and I'm about to start being with a lot of kids over the next couple of months. So I'm just looking at how I tend to deal with noise and seeing if I can find a more centered, that I tend to leave myself with and go to the noise. Or I tend to get overwhelmed by it, or...
Okay, can you stop right there for a second?
Yes.
Because I'm curious about that. So you tend to leave yourself and go with the noise, or you get overwhelmed by the noise?
I'm not sure. It may be that I leave myself and then get overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. There's a book out. I don't know when it came out, but it's called "The Rest Is Noise." And I think that's the title of it. And it's it's a look at culture through the lens of music. And the point that the author is making, or one of the points that he makes, is that we find noise really annoying if we're avoiding it, but if we attend to it, it's interesting. And so I was just looking at that today. So it's interesting to me in terms of what you're talking about, and that's why I was curious if you had a sense of what your relationship is now. With the noise, you started off saying you tend to avoid noise. You like things quiet, and so there's something that happens with the noise and your relationship to the noise that is distressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think part of it is because I have a belief that it's that I can't handle noise, that I'm real sensitive, that it feels overbearing. And I just find it, I seem to find it hard to stay connected with myself or stay with my breath or anything like that because the noise, it seems so loud, it just pulls my attention away.
Uh-huh. Not necessarily to the noise, though.
Hmm.
It sounds like, and I'm hoping you're going to take all this on as you have to take it on as a big experiment. You don't have much choice, do you? If you're
going
to live on a busy street with a bunch of children.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if what happens is that your attention isn't allowed to be with you where you're comfortable, doesn't actually go to the noise, but goes to a place in between, which is a story about not liking the noise or what the noise is or what the noise does to you.
Right. So it's like it goes to the story about the noise and what my reactions to it.
Yeah. My inability to cope with it, or I can't stand this, or it's too much, or it's overbearing, or I don't like this. I don't want this to happen. This is, you know, whatever it is, which would be a really miserable place to be. That probably either being completely with the noise, and, you know, it, being completely with the noise. Now, I don't know this, but this is just what I saw. It sounds like being completely with the pain. You know, we'll talk about, of course, you know, being pain-free. There's the ideal state. And then there is being completely at one with pain. There's nobody outside of that experience having an experience of pain. There's not even pain at that point. It's just that's all there is. That is the life experience. So the other day here, I was going to say the monks were helping me, but in truth, I was helping the monks build a little office for me outside my little house. And so there's all the noise of construction, and there are the two dogs. And they are, you know, dogs have really sensitive ears. And they are like 10 feet away from circular saws and hammers and all of this stuff. And, you know, they're just sitting there looking around because they don't seem to indulge attitudes. But I'm looking at them thinking, I wonder what that's like for them to be that sensitive to sound and then have that level of sound so close to them. And yet it seems not to affect them at all. You know, they had a big space. They could have actually gotten a lot farther away from the noise than, you know, but they were right there next to us. So does it become just if you don't have anything going about something like that, then that's just the only life experience that there is. But again, there's that in-between place where I'm somebody who's experiencing pain, and I hate it. I know what it's like not to have pain. Now I'm having this pain. It's scary. It's upsetting. It's wrong. It's, you know, it's all this stuff.
So the suffering comes from the place in between all the stories and the beliefs and not the noise so much.
I suspect possibly. That that's the case, but I think you're going to have a chance to become a real expert on this subject, and you can actually fill us in. You know, just going back and forth between those experiences. I know for myself, I mean, I live in a really, really quiet place. I mean, it is about as quiet as I think you can live on the face of the earth where human beings are anywhere around. And I love that. I also love being in the heart of Manhattan. It's obviously really different. And I love that experience as well because that's that experience. You know what I mean?
The experience of being in Manhattan?
Yeah, it would be very odd to be in Manhattan and experiencing silence.
True.
Yeah, because that's not what it is. You don't get that many people living in a little tiny space and expect to find quiet.
Right.
So it's the energy, it's the noise, it's the excitement, it's, you know, all of that stuff that's going on that is that place. And that's what, for me, at least that's a part of what's enjoyable about it.
I do have that with children because it's a noise that it can get to me, but it's also just a lot of enthusiasm and aliveness.
And it'll be really interesting to see where's that line. When do you cross over from aliveness to too much?
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
And I suspect that, because I think there's broad application for this, you know, all kinds of situations that we could fit into this sort of framework. And I suspect it has to do with as we close down.
Mm.
you know, as we start defending. And it's,
yeah,
it's kind of like the window starts closing. So it's not moving through freely any longer. There's now a me in here who's wanting a life experience other than the one that's on offer right now.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, I'll be looking for that, where that line is and
yep,
where the in-between place is.
Yeah, and what occurs to me with it is to, of course, I'm sure you do anyway, but to really consciously, as much as possible, whenever anything arises, to just relax your body as fully as possible and see if you can sense a building up of stress or resistance or that kind of thing that accompanies the, okay, I really need some quiet now, or I need these children to go home, whatever.
Wow. That's great. That gives me a lot to look at and work with.
Good. I want to tell you one other thing that occurs to me with this, and that's that story of Ram Dass. When he was doing the meditation retreat, I think he was actually in New York City, and the place where they were doing the retreat was right next to a firehouse.
Mm.
And so people are sitting there in meditation, and it probably seemed like about every 15 minutes these sirens would go off, you know, and just, you know, people finally got so upset because how can you really concentrate in this kind of noise? And he said to them, you know, it's just energy. It's just a vibration. Run it up your spine and enjoy it.
I can always use some more energy.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of us trying to clamp it down and resist it, to just let it shoot through your body and enjoy it.
Wow. Very good. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, keep us posted.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Tony. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. My name's Julie. I'm calling from Australia.
Wow.
How are you? I've called you before, and I told you I was going to buy your books and read them, and I did.
Good.
And I've read the 12 discount book sets, so I've virtually read all of them already. So, listen, I've been listening to your
not
radio
all
show.
Of them. I'm sorry. No, no. We're getting ready to publish number 20, so you've got a little ways to go, all right?
No, no, my apologies. I was reading the 12 that I received.
Okay.
So I haven't read
we'll
all of them.
Sure
my apologies.
We'll make sure you get the other however many it is, okay?
Oh, look, I got the last one was Transform Your Life, so I just got that. I received that one last week. So
all
I've been
right, good.
That.
Well, you're on a good program, and we appreciate it.
Yes, and I've mentioned your book to quite a few people.
Oh, good.
And the pictures and the simple statements and the big print make it easy and make it enjoyable and make it possible. I think that's what grabs, for me anyway, grabs my attention quite nicely.
Uh-huh. Good, good.
Listen, I wanted to say last time I spoke to you, there is a big chip on my shoulder. And I think from when I was very young, I had this ability to think outside the box. And the chip is really everybody telling me how wrong I was. And I'm trying to find what I was good at. Do you see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I think I was always trying to find that connection. Early on in my life, I had asthma. I couldn't breathe. So I went through that. Then when I was 13, I had a really down time where I faced fear of cancer when I was 12, 11, 12. I had brain tumors, losing my life. I mean, it's funny now, but it was pretty drastic then. And not
well,
a lot of people.
Sounds pretty
and then,
drastic
of course, the last kicker was I sold my soul accidentally to the devil, and that was really hard. And I remember that kept with me for 2 years, and I really was not surviving very well because at that time everybody was saying if you did something wrong, you'd go to hell, basically. That was the religion at the time. Anyway, somewhere along the line, I decided, walking to school one day, saying, well, that's then, this is now. And that was the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a lot of people, I just never figured I lived a life like normal people. I never had the confidence to do anything and or the belief. You know, there was a lot of the, you don't make good decisions for yourself. But, of course, I was in a lot of fear. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So my, you know, I don't judge people. I don't wish they were different. But I would get a lot of that back to me. Do you see what I mean? And I'm trying to survive in this world. And I tend to think I'm not as physical as other people. Like people cope. They say, just get a job. Just get over it. You know what I mean? And I'm still going, yada, 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 yada. You know what I mean? So I end up analyzing. And then, of course, you get the worst thing ever where everybody says, get out of your mind. You're still in your mind. And you're going, what does that mean? So I just wanted to tell you, too, that I had an experience in Manhattan when I came to Australia just recently. I decided to take my daughter to New York, and I said I didn't know anything about it, never been there. I was quite scared to go, and the lady says, are you going to book it? And, of course, it was that big, oh, my God. And it took all my courage to say, okay, book it. You know what I mean? And it's silly, but it was that was what the fear was. And I thought, oh, criminy, is it a good plane? Are we going to die on the plane? I mean, it's laughable. But I took my daughter there. We didn't know one single thing about New York. Got there. It was a dream trip. It was absolutely.
I just have a curiosity to know how old your daughter is.
She's 14.
Oh, okay. Okay.
She just turned 14. And because we live in a sort of in Perth in Australia, which is smaller, I wanted her to really experience a big city. I wanted her to say, I guess in my mind, there's life out there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing about New York that I thought was just absolutely brilliant was I wasn't ever scared, not once.
Mm.
From morning, noon till night, we traveled everywhere, made. I think the one thing I found easy, there was no small mind people around to tell me what I was doing wrong. And I could just take one step.
Well, you didn't know them.
They
were probably there, but you didn't know them.
I just took one step at a time. You know what I mean? I just took the next step. And it was easy. you know, and I think it was like a brilliant trip. Anyway, long and short is, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I still seem, even though I've read your books and I'm working at it, I still feel I have one foot in one world and one in the other. And my muscles in my body, this one hurts me. I don't feel like I'm living my life. I don't feel like I'm following my heart. And so I am classified in that category of people who want a different life, who want a different husband, who, you know what I mean? And a few years ago, I saw a movie called 28 Days, and Viggo Mortensen's another truth seeker, and he used this analogy of the baseball. You know, what are you thinking while you're holding the baseball? All you have in your control is your balance, your stance, your follow through, and what you're thinking while you're holding that baseball. Once the baseball let the baseball go, it's out of your control. And you don't focus on the target. You don't focus on the result because it looks too scary and you don't do it. And it's really the process. So that one little segment actually freed me up in life, to get me more aware to living, using the force, so to speak. And then a couple of weeks ago, you said, show up to yourself. And I said that added a little more personal, added to that, use the force. It was more personal. I could actually, oh, my God, I can show up to myself. And I started to understand what you're saying. Like, it's okay to feel nervous. It's okay to feel scared. Those are okay things because you're human. I mean, to actually feel your feelings. Oh, my God, that's a good thing. And I recognized how much language is around that stops you from doing that, because then you hang on to the language. And yet you're this being, you're this energy, and you can't change unless you feel your way through life. So you said show up to yourself, and all I can think of was there was a heck of a lot of people between me and me. And I was trying to get them out of the road. The way that everybody talks about their conditioning, when you're saying movement, sensation, thought, emotion, behavior, I'm a little scared to go that way because I'm afraid I'm just going to analyze it even more. Then God says here, it's intent versus intention, your convergent mind versus your divergent mind. Showing yourself up to life, you're right here. You can't be anywhere else. And so I guess sometimes yesterday, and I'm a bit down, because I got out of the car and I just felt bad. And I said, is this a story? And it was a feeling. And then the muscles get all tight. And then I start feeling like you're backing off from life. And you're not going to be around for your daughter.
Okay, help me out here because we're kind of going all over the map. What are you looking at right now?
What I'm trying to tell you in my long... I don't feel secure to help myself to make that first step to let go. If God's right here and he's everywhere, why are you letting go? What do you have? And so it's the feeling. It's like you're holding tight and you're trying to move at the same time.
Okay, here let me offer you something, okay? When there's that feeling of holding tight, so the muscles go all tense, and you've been looking at there's movement, sensation, a thought, behavior that follows that, the emotion and behavior. So when you look at that and you realize there's all that tightness and tension, and you're aware of the story that's going with it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to see if you can just stop right there, turn all of your attention to the feelings in your body, the sensations in your body, feel that tension and that tightness, turn your attention to your breath, and use the breath to just let the tension kind of flow out of your body.
Okay.
So you take a breath in, and as you exhale, you just imagine all of that tension. You just let go of every muscle that you can possibly let go. Take in another breath, and as you exhale, just let all of the tension go. Just, you know, make sure you're sitting down comfortably, and then just let your whole body sink back into whatever is supporting you. And
because
do that. Pardon me?
Oh, the story that comes up when you're saying that is, for the longest time, everybody said there was something wrong with you. It's your problem. You'll grow out of it. And they've said that all my life. And even when I said I had a daughter and I said I wouldn't want her to turn out like me, the story was nobody would say anything, you know. And so many people go, oh, Julie, you were loved. You were treated nicely. I said, you know what? It's amazing how you don't say that to the person. You don't say it to the person. You just tell them behind their backs, but you say something different to them. And so the longest time with these muscles, even when I married my husband, who was very much like my father, and I'm still trying to find approval, like how ridiculous is that? And really what I've called you for and maybe what I see you for is like sometimes I just need someone to say, you're okay, and you're loved, and you're worthwhile.
Well, yes, and I can certainly say that that is true because it is true. And I think you know that it's not going to matter to you until you say it to you, for you.
That's, I avoid that. I don't know
well,
why.
Well, yeah, but yes.
Yeah, so you say you love yourself.
Conditioning avoids that. But,
okay.
But what we're talking about here is a practice. So
yes.
You can combine those two things. You can you can think about what you would say to your daughter when she was little to comfort her. You know, she falls down or she gets upset about something. You know, what would you say to her? You know, it's okay. I'm here. You're going to be all right. I love you. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you sit there in your chair and you focus on the breath. You take a breath in. You let it go. You feel the tension drain out of your body. And you repeat to yourself what it is that you know to be true that you want to hear.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I use that language. Okay.
Okay. Do that.
No,
do that
I will.
For a couple of weeks, and then get back to me and let me know how it's going.
Thank you. I want to say that I do use that language to my daughter, and I said to my husband the other day, I said, you know, I said to you that Nikki was a miracle when she was born, and everybody said that was ridiculous, and it would come back
okay.
to me.
Let's not go on to another story.
Okay, okay.
Just stay with that breath, letting go of the tension, and saying to you what you need to hear. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing.
There was another question I have that
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Let's just stay
all right.
with one
I'll call
thing.
You in 4 weeks, and I'll
all
make
right.
this
Good
my
woman.
Big thing.
Good for
all right. Thank
all
you
right,
very much,
care.
Sherry. Thank you, Michael. And
good
listen,
night.
if it has anything to say to you, I would come to your monastery. You were writing down the dates for what you were having up, and I thought, no, I'm coming.
Good.
So one day.
All right. Excellent.
All right.
Thank you
very much.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Julie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I have a feeling it's not good night for her, though. It's a good day.
Yes. I think from our other friends in China and Korea,
mm-hmm.
I think it's about mid-morning there.
Yeah.
Very exciting. And very exciting that we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Hi. Well, the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at depression.
Goodness.
Which has been fascinating to see it in much greater awareness than I've ever seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And go ahead.
What have you seen?
What have I seen? I've seen, it's a real vulnerable place for me, so conditioning loves it. I've seen how the energy change in my body, it usually starts with a drop in energy.
Uh-huh.
So I feel fatigue, and then conditioning grabs that and goes, oh, my God, you're depressed. It's going to be horrible.
Uh-huh.
And then it starts the it's sort of a kind of a snowball effect down the hill. At first it's kind of believable, like, oh, my God, yeah, I've kind of suffered or experienced depression on and off. As long as I can remember, but haven't really, really looked at it within this practice recently.
Uh-huh. Does it seem like you just haven't needed to? It hasn't been what's been there?
Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah, it hasn't arisen. I don't think it's arisen since I've started this practice. So this is just a new experience to look at.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I must say, it does seem like some sort of blessing that it's coming to you now at this point in your practice. In the sense that you've got a lot of practice tools behind you to help you work with it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you said that, because I think I did, maybe in year two or so, I did get hit by a hard depression, and I sort of gave up practice. I think the depression talked me out of practice for a while. And this time it was like, no. Let's just, you know, I struggled to get on the cushion. I struggled to continue on with all my things. Just physically, I didn't have any of the, I would say, kind of baseline energy I normally have.
Oh, yeah.
Which is quite high.
Uh-huh.
So, but I did not stop practice this time, which has been a huge change from, the very last time I looked at depression in this practice.
You know, Todd, this just occurred to me. So I'll tell you, you may have this tool in place already, but if you have a picture of yourself as a little guy, it would be possibly a good idea to get that picture out and put it near your cushion and in a couple of other places that you'll see.
Yeah.
Because it can be a good time to have a reminder of who you will be abandoning if you give up now.
Yeah. It's funny you said that. I'm looking at him right now. He's 1 year old. He's in the center of my Living Beyond Karma poster.
Uh-huh.
And then I've got pictures from about age 1 through 14 that surround my poster.
Good.
So,
yeah,
and it's right above where I sit. So thank you.
So
but
check in with him often, and he'll be able to help you strengthen your resolve.
Yes. Yes, to help me strengthen my resolve. And it seemed the story was it was more intense this time, but I think only because I had more awareness of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, wow, this thing is powerful. But the stories before, which were so believable, that would sink me into months to months and months of it. I popped out within like, you know, eight or 10 days, which for me is like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I've just been interviewed twice in the last week on the subject of depression. I don't know why.
Yeah.
The depression book is making its way around, or it's the time
right.
of year where more people are experiencing depression. But one of the things that I heard myself talking with this one doctor about was having the realization that if I compared the amount of energy that was available to me when I felt depressed with how I normally was, then I could feel incapacitated. Because compared to the... And this, to me, is what you're also indicating. You know, you're a really high-energy person. And so to suddenly lose all of that energy, it feels like, well, you know, I can't do anything. But when I gave up that comparison and just looked at the amount of energy I had and asked myself, now, do I have enough energy to, and then I would name the activity. Well, I can do that. Do I have enough to, Now, am I going to feel the way I'm used to feeling while I'm doing that? No. But that's not the same as I can't do it.
Yeah.
And there's just such freedom in getting really clear about the beliefs, the expectations, the standards, as I think Catherine was talking about, the you know, what's being put forth as as how it is and what's real compared to, yeah, but what is my experience of what's going on right now?
Yeah, and I'll tell you something that was really helpful, as you just said, that sure came up for me, was that one of your most recent blogs, and the practice blog was about depression and kind of energy begets energy.
Uh-huh.
And I think I read that blog, and I was talked out of going to the gym that day, and then I thought, but, boy, if I go and move some of this energy that is blocked, I felt, through that stories of depression, and I dragged myself to the gym in after an hour of just doing things like cutting my expectations in half.
Yeah.
You know, cutting my weights in half, cutting the time on the, you know, on the track in half, cutting my swimming in half, I walked out of there with twice as much energy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as you described in the blog.
Yeah, that was a. Oh, I forgot. I don't keep track of those things from moment to moment.
Yeah.
So that's a good
yeah.
reminder. But one of the things that one of the folks was asking about was exactly that, and her comment was the idea of. Of using exercise to relieve depression is certainly nothing we got in medical school. You know,
right.
that's just such a
yeah.
a foreign concept to people, and yet because it and reasonably so. You know, when I'm lying here on the floor, unable to get up, it
yeah.
does seem like I don't have any energy. But
yeah.
then moving, and whatever it takes to get yourself to move. And realize that the energy starts being released it's a compelling experience to have.
It really is, and it's brought me to a whole new appreciation of this practice, the tools of practice, and the really ability there's a lot of mentoring. There's always in my practice a lot of mentoring, but there was parts of me that were really, really suffering through this. You know, I put depression in quotations now because I really believe it's more of a story than anything.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, that's such that's such an important point, Todd.
Right. Yeah. Because I saw it as really clinically. You know, I've been clinically diagnosed, and I'll take that diagnosis. And now it's like, well, whoa.
Yeah.
Is that my true experience?
Yeah. Or in fact, is this label?
Right.
Something that is keeping that person from who's really suffering and needs to be compassionately embraced and cared for out of the whole picture, because we're just focused over here on this label intellectual understanding of this thing called depression. Meanwhile,
right.
this poor guy is over there with nobody to help him.
Yes, nobody to help him, and I just slog through. I didn't, I may have cut some other activities out, but for me, I did not cut any practice activities out at all, and I think it was incredibly supportive because it allowed me to keep that, you know, conscious compassion awareness and the mentoring going through the really dark, dark times when the stories really ramped up, and it was hitting really spots of me that were vulnerable that I hadn't kind of looked at ever before in this practice with depression.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was very, very supportive and very beneficial. And as I say here today, it's dissipated. It's gone. I have no after effects of it. I don't feel one bit. My energy level is back up. I'm right back
to
kind of where I was before it began.
Yesterday I got up and what I was looking at, and I think it's going to be the next blog, is is how when we pay attention to it that way, how perfect the timing is for what goes on with us. You know, that this would come up for you now when you have all of this ability to deal with it, to be there for yourself, to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that new aspects of this could be revealed to you in a way that is really, in the big picture, very safe.
Yeah.
And you could have the ability to heal some old karma that's been lurking around there for a long time and may have been hitting you at other times. But you didn't have the ability to heal it then. And
right.
now you do. So here it is. And you get to go through that experience. And not only is that guy taken care of and that karma is dissolved, maybe completely, maybe just some. And your sense of confidence in yourself and your ability to be there for yourself is reinforced.
Yes. Yes,
so
it is. Yeah,
what we're taught to think of as this complete negative, we begin to realize is just so beautifully and perfectly timed for our benefit.
Wow. That is beautifully framed. Yeah. And again, when and it just quickly reminds me then that when I see my energy levels plummeting, it's like, okay, all right, we've done this.
Yeah, somebody needs
maybe,
help here.
Yeah, that little young person, like you said, prominently displayed, needs to be walked up to and looked in the eyes and said, all right,
yeah,
I won't abandon you.
That's right.
I'm here for you, last time.
Yeah, it's bad, it's scary, it's hard, it's painful. Yeah, it is. By God, we're gonna get through it.
We're going to get through it. Well, thanks so much, Sherry. Appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you.
So grateful for this practice, and thank you, Michael. And I'll say good night.
All right. Good night, Todd.
All right. Take good care.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I love these success stories.
Uh-huh. It's just a comfort, isn't it, to realize over and over again that practice works.
Yes, yes. And to have that direct experience is so reinforcing.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, sir. Let's do it again.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, our callers, our many listeners. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Good night.
Good night.